The opinions expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, staff, management, or advertisers.
Coming to you on stations coast to coast, it's the Making It Radio Show with your hosts, self-made millionaires, Tommy Runfola and Todd Williams. Tommy Runfola, founder and president of one of America's top technology consumer products and media companies, author, investor, and National Entrepreneur of the Year nominee. Tommy has worked with five U.S. presidents and vice presidents. Todd Williams, founder and CEO of Inc. Magazine's 2013 fastest growing food and beverage companies in America, a former NBC TV personality, and Harvard Business alumnus. Making It is the source for success stories and in the trenches information that outlines a roadmap to the American dream. And now, here's Tommy and Todd.
This is Tommy Runfola and Todd Williams, America's favorite entrepreneurs, coming to you coast to coast on Making It. Brittany's here. Todd's here. Let's go to work, guys. Come on. What do you got going on, Brittany, on Making It?
All right. We have a very interesting and deep lineup today, people. First, we're going to be discussing leverage on a life-saving drug. Is it ethical? Is this a good business move? Blah, 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 all that good stuff. Second, we're going to be discussing the story behind Nike and the man behind Nike. And then lastly, we're going to be discussing everyone's favorite controversial subject, taxes. Ooh. Who should be footing the bill?
Nobody.
Well, let's just talk about
Nobody
taxes
should pay
the
taxes.
Whole show.
Yeah.
You can email us your hate mail at...
Right.
Yeah. All right. So, first up, leveraging a life-saving drug. Now, this drug, Tommy, I'm going to let you give the details on what it does and all the medical details on it. But basically, the entrepreneur who acquired the rights to this drug decided to increase the price by it 50-fold overnight. So, total price hike. It went from $13.50 a pill to $750 a pill.
Does Todd own this company?
Yeah. You can
who
send your hate mail
own
to
that margin. Okay. Before we get ethical, who would want to own that margin?
Right, yeah, excellent margin. Okay, well, anyway. Let me tell you a little more of his story. So he said, we need to turn a profit on this drug. He was already turning a profit. This drug was actually developed in the 1940s by the company that then became part of GlaxoSmithKline.
Oh, he was turning a profit at $13.50?
Yeah, he was already making money. Okay. But he wanted to make more money, so he decided to increase the price of it 50-fold. So that's where the problem lies. He's a former hedge fund manager. So that's his background.
Well, he knows about making money then.
And he said he raised the price because the profits will help create better medicines in the future. That's how he's trying to justify it.
Yeah.
Tommy,
well,
give us more
you know,
details.
With all due respect to him and to the people that think that's outrageous, these drug companies really do have to invest large amounts of money in research and development, and they have to make that money somewhere.
But he said he's making the money on the $13.50.
Well, not making enough money.
$750 between $13.50. I'm just saying.
I'm not saying that that's right. But and again, with defending him just a little, he also said if people can't afford it, that he'll give them the drug free. You know, but he just acquired this company. He's got to get it on its right footing. He's got to have money for future research and development.
Is he saying that people prove they can't afford it?
He didn't say prove. He just said if they can't afford it.
And how's he going to give it away? Is he going to have like an insurance company type end that evaluates people and their financial state?
No one will pay for it.
I agree with you. Nobody will want to pay for it. But I'm assuming he's talking maybe about older people on Medicare and that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's some
kind
of qualifications.
Yeah, there's going to have to be qualifications.
Medicare pays for it.
Yeah. Well, they're not going to pay $750 a pill. And of course, medical organizations have said they're going to have to find cheaper alternatives. And of course, that's always the risk you run when you raise your prices, that somebody's going to come up with a comparable product and sell it cheaper.
Well, and in this case, the main concern, because I actually gotten a couple very deep conversations with a scientist who was in charge of cloning drugs for generic medical companies. And so he explained to me the process, and he said that most generic pills and medicines out there in the market work in pretty much, they're literally just as good. So they get as close as possible to the formula. They just change one tiny thing, and it's pretty much just as good as the real deal.
Right.
In this case, there's some issues with the generics and other substitute drugs not being as good. So the main ethical concern is, are doctors and patients going to be turning to substitutes that in this case might not save their life? So we're literally talking life or death right here.
I think that proves the value of the particular drug, which, by the way, we haven't said is a drug called Daraprim, and it's used for the treatment of toxoplasmosis.
And you?
I have no idea, except it's an infection.
Do you have a short version of that?
An uncommon infection that people get.
Okay.
That's as much as I know about it. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I think that the deeper question is, should drug companies be regulated by the government? I mean, we have the FDA. Some people say that it's already too strict and too over-regulated, and that in fact, all the testing that's required by the FDA ultimately raises the price of drugs unnecessarily, mm-hmm. because they have to go through all these tests and regulations that, by the way, in other countries, they don't have to do. So, is that the real problem here, or are we blaming the drug company when really the real problem is our own FDA and the hoops that they make drug companies jump through to put their products on the market?
I tried to avoid, any political deals with this, but it actually does take us into the whole healthcare issue.
Yes.
Because what do we have? You know, if we stay partisan about this and just think, you could say it's about ethics versus capitalism, or or you can say the whole ethical issue about if someone's sick, does everyone deserve care regardless if they can pay for it or not?
Mm.
Does everyone deserve this drug even if they can't pay $750 for
right.
it? Where does the marketplace, capitalism, and ethical responsibility come together? And the invisible hand dictates the economy. Mm-hmm. If people will pay for it, then you can charge it. If they won't pay for it, then that puts you out. Are you listening to Making It with Tommy and Todd Coast to Coast? But back to the opening up this whole healthcare issue. A few months ago during the debates, they talked about the topic of healthcare, and the topic was brought up, everyone deserves health care, and then the other side was give it back to the insurance companies and open up competition. So
yes.
Put in the hands of the insurance companies and let them compete. And the competition will dictate that they will actually, charge lower rates, all the various things. Somehow you'll get better health care because someone's going to actually give people what they want at all different levels of the economy. And I thought, the thing is, when you're sick or you have a health problem or something like that, that just feels kind of shaky because you're like, is it going to be guaranteed out there?
Right.
Right.
Health makes it brings a different factor.
Well, and this being a life-saving drug.
A life-saving drug.
Yeah.
So it's like, do you put it in the marketplace, and then will the marketplace actually take care of you because the competition is driving them to do it?
Well,
does the government need to do it?
Well, the problem is, if government is involved, does it stymie profitability? If it stymies profitability, does it stymie innovation, as an example? What incentive would there be to develop a very expensive drug that can cure AIDS or cancer or whatever, if once you develop it, the government's going to step in and say, well, you can't charge.
Absolutely.
You can't charge for that.
It's going to affect that incentive.
Of course.
But at the same time, if you're looking from the consumer viewpoint, the patient, you want to know that you have health care. You want to know that if your kids get sick, they're going to get good health care.
Right.
Right.
But like you said, like I have a friend of mine that's a doctor, and he said, if I start getting mandated on, you know, how much I can make, then I'm just going to stop working as much.
Well, and young people are going to stop going to medical school, and scientists and companies that produce drugs are going to say, you know, there's no profit in this business. I don't want to go into it. This whole thing brings me back in my brain to other innovations. You know, I remember in the 1970s when I bought my first computer. My first computer cost me $87,000. And this is 1970s money, not today's
right.
money.
Right.
You know, today that computer, actually a better computer than what I had then, which, by the way, in the 1970s weighed 600 pounds and had less memory than my cell phone does today.
Right.
That computer, it was considered a marvel. And I had to pay an outrageous amount of money to be the first and to be an innovator in the computer business that I was in. So would if the government had stepped into technology, say, and say, well, this is such a great innovation that it needs to sell for $300 instead of $87,000, would anybody have developed that particular technology at that time?
Right. I'm with you, but I have to say, of all the topics, you know, left and right topics and the topics and going on, this healthcare topic is different because you're dealing with lives.
Yeah.
It gets into so many more ethical issues.
Right.
I mean, I had one person I know, she's a nurse. And she said, everybody wants to live forever.
Right.
Now. Everyone wants to live long.
Right.
Like, no one wants to be pulled off life support. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
No one, so there's all, she almost talked about it like she's exasperated at the fact of, you know, having to keep everybody around, just the way she's talking.
Right.
And taking up hospital bed. But there's a limited amount of hospital beds because it's a business.
Right.
At the same time, the ethical issue of, like, keeping someone alive or everyone deserves care, it is a touchy issue that's different.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the other thing on the global issue, the thing that really bothers me a little bit is that, you know, people are still smoking. People are still drinking too much. People are still obese.
Now and, you're hitting into another topic.
Exactly. But we're not giving the same sort of emphasis to wellness. We're saying somebody come up with a pill that doesn't cost a lot of money, and let's just do away with all the maladies that affect mankind.
People don't at that point, that's at the consumer level. Like, people just reject wellness, by and large.
I agree.
I heard, you know, somebody showed me a study where they actually brought really healthy foods into this school system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, vegetables and fruits, and they took all the bad stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, I think Michelle Obama's tried to do that.
Yeah, and they did try to do that. In the schools. And they found, like, all the lunches in the garbage.
Yes.
Like, they were just throwing them away.
Right.
Like, there was the move to be preventative.
Wow.
Right.
And they threw them in the garbage. And so you're fighting the consumer demand to do things that make them continually unhealthy.
Right. Exactly.
Then they show up at the hospital and the doctor's offices. And then they want their care paid for.
Right.
Or they want guaranteed health care. And so, then you can divide the people that have a legitimate problem because it just came because it's genetic or something.
Yeah.
Between the people that are lifestyle problems.
Right.
So is the answer to say to people, if you can't afford these expensive drugs, we'll pay for them, but you need to take care of yourself. You can't be obese. You can't smoke. You can't use alcohol improperly. And then we'll pay for them.
I like that direction of going where you have to do something preventative to qualify for the benefit.
Yeah, and then everybody would be better off. Yeah. I like it too.
Great topic. You're listening to Tommy and Todd on Making It Coast to Coast.
Your questions about business, career, personal development, and achieving the American dream are more than welcome. Email them to info@makingitnow.com. Now back to more Making It with Tommy and Todd.
OMG Fact of the Week. Abraham Lincoln's corpse has been buried, exhumed, inspected, or reburied at least 17 times since his death.
Wow.
You say superstition.
Yeah, you know, Todd, when I heard you were going to give that particular fact, I did a little research because I find that very interesting. I don't think any other president or important person in history has been exhumed that many times. You know, in the early 1900s, Lincoln's body was exhumed, and they found it in a pine box. And because in 1876 there was an attempt to rob his grave and hold the government hold the body for ransom, they decided that they needed a more permanent way of concealing the body in the ground. So the plan was that they were going to raise the body, identify Lincoln in the pine grave, and then bury it in 10 feet of soil and 4,000 pounds of concrete so that wow. robbers couldn't get it. So when they did that, they had to open the grave and make sure it was Lincoln. And his features were, when they did that, it was totally recognizable. The only real change was that his eyebrows had vanished. And there were some bits of red fabric on his body, possibly the remnants of an American flag. And they had 23 different people view the body to make sure they all agreed that that was Lincoln. And in fact, it was. Yeah.
Wow. We took that OMG fact. That's called OMG Fact of the Week Extended.
Extended version. Fact of the Week. Yes.
That was the reverse Reader's Digest version.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Next up. A man who has definitely made it and really helped an entire company and brand and cultural phenomenon make it. We're talking about the man behind Nike, Phil Knight. Tommy, give me the rundown.
Well, you know, Phil Knight is an American businessman and philanthropist. He's a native of Oregon, co-founder and chairman emeritus of Nike Corporation. A really, really interesting guy. Forbes found him to be the 15th richest person in the world. So he's got a little bit of money. When you examine the life of Phil Knight, the thing that always strikes me, like many, many wealthy people in the United States at least, is his philanthropy. He attended the University of Oregon and the Stanford Graduate School, and he's given the largest donation in history at the time that he gave it in 2006 to Stanford University, gave them a gift of $400 million, if you Wow. can imagine that.
Wow.
He ran track in college, and in fact, with his college coach, he started the Nike company, and that's kind of an interesting story. So when he was in college, after college, he went to the military. He came out of there and he went to Stanford Graduate School. And while in class there, he realized that he had another love other than athletics, and that was business. He loved the idea of being an entrepreneur. So when he graduated from business school, he took a worldwide trip, and one of the places he went was to Japan. And he found a brand of tennis shoes that he really liked there that were very inexpensive to make, and he got a license from this Japanese company to sell those shoes, which I think were called Tiger brand yeah. shoes, in the Western United States. And he thought that what he would do is go back to his old college coach and, try to A, sell him some shoes and B, get his endorsement. And his college coach said, why don't we start a company selling these? And so the it wasn't yet named Nike, but the brand was started from there. You know, the story that Todd always tells about Nike is that Phil Knight started selling these shoes from the trunk of his car. He had this old Valiant, Plymouth Valiant car, and he started selling them out of the trunk of his car. And that was the first Nike store, if you will.
Well, you know, he actually, you know, a little bit more detail on that. The idea for the company came up. It was his thesis at Stanford.
Right.
So he actually, you know, made up the idea about selling athletic running shoes cheaper by getting them, sourcing them from overseas.
Yes.
Japan or whatever. And so then when he actually took his thesis and he said, I'm going to follow this thesis and I'm going to make this company. And so he goes over to Japan, and that's when he got a exclusive distribution deal is what he got.
Yes.
Since they weren't his products, he just said, I want to be the exclusive distributor of these Tiger shoes. And they were cheaper, and they were track shoes. And he went to track meets and, you know, and sold the track suits to track meets. One of his big things that got his company, got the company moving was he took out a full-page ad for, like, all the money he had in the back of a running magazine.
Yes.
And he advertised the Tiger shoes and, like, it did pretty well. He made some money on it, and that got him, you know, really rolling on that company. You know, one of the things I see off that is before we even move on to the rest of his story is how following through with a niche. Like, you know, he was a runner.
Right.
He went to track. He understood track. You know, stay where you know what you're doing.
Exactly.
When you want to start a business.
Rule number one.
You want to really succeed at it.
Grow where you're planted.
Yo, grow where you're planted. Stick with what you're passionate about. Stay around what you know. We're going to continue talking about Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. When we get back, you're listening to Tommy and Todd on Making It Coast to Coast. We'll be right back.